Cool.
Hey, Renter Retires. It's Adam Schrader here with another episode, joined as usual by the founder and CEO of Renter Retirement, Zach Leemaster. And we are happy to be continuing our three-part series today, and that is with Randall Davidson. He is the CEO of True Heroes. This series we're talking about is all about accessing capital. Randall, tell us a little bit about yourself, and when did you feel the calling that you needed to help people get more capital? Get more money. How did you become that guy?
Well, I got to tell you, I started out in the mortgage business back in the 1900s, just so you know, back in 1997. Before that, I was actually in the boat business, and I owned a boat dealership, and a friend of mine had asked me to see if I could help them figure out how to do loan financing for mortgages for homes. And so I kind of had to run and start from scratch and get going back in 97. From there, I put together my own mortgage company and had that going all the way up through the crash, 2008, 2009. From there, I went when everything kind of came apart. At that point, I had I got into a lot of development, so I had a lot of land development out and a lot of things happening at that point. Everything kind of happened all at once. I was one of those people that took a pretty darn good hit, and I ended up having to go to a bank to stay in that realm. And so I ended up going over to Bank of England and was helping them getting financing, and it opened up a lot more for me on the mortgage side. And then in 2012, while I was doing that, I got a call from a company called Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki's group. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them.
We've heard of them.
Might know about them.
Yes. They actually reached out to me because they were trying to find compliant financing for people trying to do real estate and investing in their space. And in order to do that in a compliant fashion and stay within the walls that are needed, I had to go in there and help them get that set up to keep an arm's length transaction product for them. And then from there, we helped them in the US, and then we moved in and helped them in Canada, then we helped them in Australia, and then we helped them in the UK. So from that point, we've actually grown to a point where we worked with them, and now we've expanded beyond them. We work with just basically under 70 companies in that space, helping people basically build their businesses and get into real estate and do what they really want to do. And for me, the good thing is that I've kind of become, it's kind of become a bit of a mantra where when we do our stats, one of the biggest stats we have is how many people did we help this month? How many people did we help reach their vision and move them to the next steps in their lives and their goals? So it's kind of the way we work. It's the way we handle it. We're a family business. My two sons and my three daughters helping us get this going, daughter-in-law. And when I say get this going, we've now been going since 2012, and we've been cooking all ever since.
That's awesome. And thank you for sharing that. You've had an interesting journey over the years. And just for clarity purposes for everyone listening, we want to dive into like exactly what you do, Randall, and how you can help our listener base. This three-part series is all about, the simple fact of buying real estate. The most limiting factor is capital, right? You can put 20-25% down on a real estate deal. That's fantastic. But it takes quite a bit of time if your only approach is to save up money for that next down payment and to be a creative investor to scale, because scalability is the name of the game. You know, you need to look at creative ways to access additional capital. We've talked about investing through retirement vehicles, using HELOCs to invest, partnerships, et cetera, What we're going to be talking about today is some interesting concepts around credit lines and some other things. I'll let you share since you're the expert. But yeah, we're excited to be partnered with you. Renter Retirement is one of these 70 companies alongside Rich Dad that you assist with. And our initial discussion was around helping people finance our education platform, the Renter Retirement Academy. Even though it's a very low ticket platform, You know, the argument could be made that, you know, if you're in a position where you're a newer investor and you don't have the few thousand bucks to sign up for the academy to kickstart your real estate journey, this could be, you could use this as a potential financing option to finance the course in part or whole. But also the argument could be made that maybe you save your money for a real estate deal and use some sort of financing scenario to be able to cover your academy membership, to be able to buy real estate sooner with the capital that you have. But then the conversation evolved into, well, how can you assist people with, you know, that abuse that 20% down payment on their first investment or whatever, and they're tapped out till next year, right? How else can you help people using creative lines of credit or things like this to actually be a savvy investor to scale quicker? So can we just dive right into that of like what you do on the credit side and how this works and how you're able to help so many people?
Of course. So I will tell you that one thing I've learned over my years is leverage is the only way that you're going to be able to make it happen. And so the fact of the matter is that if you're going to take the time, you're going to take all the time it takes to save up, you're going to miss out on a lot of opportunity that you don't have to necessarily miss out on if you approach leverage from the right angle. Leverage to me is a lot like, it's a lot like a fire, right? You can either have, you need it to warm, but if you have too much of it, you can get burned out, right? You can get burned up. The reality here is that why we have to approach these things with all this type of creativity is because we recognize that in order to take that next jump in your vision and your dream, you're going to have to take some of that. You're going to have to take some of that leverage as a way to get there. So the other thing I've learned is that it's better to have it and not need it than to not have it when you need it, if that makes sense. So we're going to talk about the different types of financing. I'm going to cover that now. But my whole thing there is listen, let's not wait till you need it. It's too late. If you wait till you need it, that banks don't like to lend it then. They want to lend it when you don't need it and you're ready for it and it's sitting there. So you got to be prepared. You got to be ready up in advance. So what we've got is that we've approached it from a little bit of a different strategy where we have different types of financing options that we can use. First option we have is a simple installment loan product, and it is not unsecured, not tied to your house, not tied to your car. This is something that opens that collateral still up for other options where you talked about HELOCs, but this is a way where you can get installment loans up to 30 to 40 grand that have a fixed rate, fixed term, fixed payment, 36 month, 60 month terms. They deliver the funds to you in a bulk lump sum. So you'll get it in the form of an ACH type product in your bank account. From there, if you're going to use it as a down payment, then it can sit for that time, that seasoning period that's going to be required for any mortgage company. They're going to want to make sure that there is a seasoning on that money. I'm sure you've covered that.
And just to be clear, that's usually a 60-day. Like the bank, like a conventional lender, they want to see past two bank statements. They want to see that money's in there, right? Same thing with possibly, you know, a partnership or whatever. You can't be gifted money to buy an investment property if that person's not on the loan. But, you know, look, if you partner with someone, they give you money, whatever your terms are with them, and it's sitting in your bank account for at least two statement cycles, so 60 days usually, then that money, they're not going to ask for where that money came from. They're not going to ask previous information. For all intents and purposes, that money can be used as a down payment. So that's what Randall's referring to, is that seasoning period for conventional type of financing or Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loans. Can you just define real quick, what is an installment loan?
Installment loan is basically a structured monthly payment. It's like a car loan, but it's not tied to your car. So it'll go out 60 days. It'll have a set payment, a set term. Like, for example, it might be 36 months. It might be 60 months on the term. The payment is going to be, or the interest rate is locked in at whatever the interest rate is. It's going to be tied to your credit score. But it is unsecured, so the rates are going to be higher because there's more risk to the lender. In your case, sometimes that's not the issue. It's not about the rate. It's about using this bridge to just bridge the gap from where you're at to when you can get going and pay it off as quick as you can or whatever you're going to do with it.
So this would be an interesting scenario where someone could, I don't want to call it a personal loan, but it kind of seems like it's a, because it's not tied to anything. Are they personally guaranteeing it?
Yeah, it's personal guaranteed, correct.
So this is kind of like a personal loan where if they were to qualify, and I do want to understand what the qualification criteria for this is and like how to know how much capital someone could have, but accessible to them. But let's say they do qualify for it, and you threw out some numbers. I think you said 30, 40,000, depending. Like someone could essentially get a loan for whatever, 5 years, where it's a set repayment schedule. It's not tied to anything. They are personally guaranteeing it, but it's kind of like a personal loan in that case. Am I misunderstanding that correctly? Or
no, that's right. And that is, that's one of the options that we want to cover. It's just, it's simple, slick, and clean.
Let me ask two more before we move on. Two more questions. What is the qualification criteria for that? And what is, I know you mentioned a couple numbers, 30, 40K or whatever, but what is the typical range that the average person can obtain? Because if they're buying a $200,000 property, 20% of that would be $40,000 down. You may have some closing costs, but like, well, could it be possible where they could get an installment loan for $40,000 over five, pay that back over 5 years, use that to buy in a $200,000 investment property as their down payment after it's seasoned, and then kind of be into a deal for no money down, assuming they're, you know, paying that back with the cash flow or whatever.
Yeah, as long as they've got the cash flow coming in. The great thing about getting investment properties, as you know, is that they account for the rent, the proposed rent coming in. As long as you've done that before, they'll account for some that rent to cover the debt to income ratio and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure you covered all that. So.
Yeah. So what's the qualification? Sorry, I rambled on too. What is the qualification and what is the typical loan amount?
So it goes down to about a 650 score, sometimes 620. 650 is pretty common, is the credit score. They do require income verification in that case. So they're going to look for a W-2 or some sort of, if you're getting it from a 401k or something, it's got to be structured so that they know how much over the next 4 years that's going to be covered. And then the other question you asked me was, what did you say?
Typical amounts that you should see.
I can find out how much you can get.
$25,000 really is easy to get. It's common. 30 to 40 happens quite often, but it depends on the income, the income marking. If you're making over $150,000 a year, getting 30 to 40 grand is not an issue. If you're making $80,000 a year, it's a little bit more.
Yeah, so this is great. I mean, this is a simple way that someone is basically, I'm going to use my own nomenclature here, but a down payment loan for whatever set terms where you could cover part or all of your potential down payment, pay that back with the cash flow over X amount of years, and essentially, you know, have additional money to buy more properties on a very simplistic example. I mean, is that fair to say?
Yeah. And the thing about it is that you know that after, if you do a 36-month loan or a 60-month term, then you know after that 3 years or 5 years, that loan's gone. It's not going to carry on like a credit card might. You know, credit cards, average American takes 21 years to pay off a credit card. This is paid off in 3 to 5 years, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, you could pay it off with cash flow. You could pay it off with additional future income from your job. Potentially refinance, I'm thinking, right, as you build equity.
Yep.
And now these are, you know, these are set, like fixed. Are they essentially based off of prime rates, or kind of if you're someone just thinking about it and being like, well, you know, how much am I going to be paying back? Is there a general rule of thumb for what you should be expecting rates to be?
So the rates range based on credit score because it's credit risk based because there's no collateral.
Right.
Well, they basically say, okay, if somebody has a 720 score or higher, our chances of default is X. And I can tell you those numbers if you care. But if you go down below, you go to, you know, if you're 680, 650 all the way down, then the lower the score, then the higher the risk is that that's not going to fly. So the rates go up. So it can be, you can have an 8.9% rate. You can have that go up to a 25% rate. Depends on the credit score. So it's really based on credit score. It's credit score driven. It's not necessarily a prime rate. You know, they don't tie it to prime like you would an ARM.
Yeah, it's an unsecured loan. I mean, that's this the reality of what it is, right? So you have to just calculate that in to your numbers to see if it makes sense for you. It will certainly affect cash flow, but I mean, again, scalability is the game here. You have to be able to qualify for this, but it could be a way to have additional capital to expand your portfolio and accomplish more ultimately, right? Like being forward thinking, if I were to use this and run the numbers on it, I would say, okay, you know, this interest rate is somewhat irrelevant, but we have to factor it into the cash flow analysis on the property. But in X amount of years, as rents go up 5 to 6% per year, you know, possibly, you know, it's covering it at some point in time. But really the big picture is like you're acquiring an asset, cash flow aside, that is going up in value, paying the loan down, tax benefits, et cetera, et cetera. You're buying more real estate with less money out of your own pocket. And this is just one of different ways to look at accessing that. Randall, before we move on to other creative things that you do, is there any other items that you want to cover on the installment loan aspect?
I think the thing that we all kind of sometimes don't realize is that even on your car loan, like if you get a car loan, once you set the payment up and that payment is $750 a month, whatever the payment is, right? You don't pay attention to the interest rate. You pay attention to the monthly cost or the use of the use of that money. So where you're basically just servicing the debt for the use of that money. Once you lock in what the payment's going to be, that's the number that at this point matters the most, right? Because you're trying to figure out your cash flow and how that works. It's not so much about the rate as much as what the payment is, because it's going to pay itself off. Or I loved your idea, quite frankly, you know, after you own the property, you can refinance it after you've had that property for a year. You can refinance it and completely wipe that out if you liked. So there's a couple of different ways that you can use that to your benefit along the way. It doesn't have to be something that's just forever there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Zach is all about getting that denominator of capital in as close to zero or to zero as possible, because that's how you get that high return on investment.
That's how the game is played, right? And capital, as we've said 1,000 times, is the most greatest common limiting. Yes, so it is. Randall, what else you got for us? You do some other creative things besides installment loans.
We do. Now we're going to get creative. So the first one is pretty simple and easy. It's a great way to work. And it's, like I say, it's you get it, it's cut dry. The other option that we have is more creative. And I always say to people, you know, using the system to your advantage is not a bad thing. It's just that people don't understand what all those options are and what they look like, because it's part of what the system that we think we know is. And I usually take the example of Delta Airlines. If I go to Delta Airlines and I have a problem with my ticket, and I go to the regular person, then they're going to treat me like anybody else. But if I know the secret and I go to the guy in the red coat at the airport, I'm going to get whatever I want, because that's part of the system, right? So if you understand the system, you'll get things better knowing what they are. And I take that now to this. So what I have is, we have a situation where instead of going to a single bank to get credit lines, because having open credit lines and having availability, as I said from the top, that's the key, because you don't have to go back and try and reapply if you've already got the credit line sitting in your own, you know, sitting in your back pocket, right? So the idea behind that is that if we can go out and get a series of, if I go to single bank, by the way, and I just try and get a credit line, I'm going to have P&Ls, balance sheets, tax returns for the last 3 years. And I've got to have a, you know, business plan, or I've got to have, cost breakdowns. All those different things have to be included to get those funds in place. If I do unconventional business funding, what that is it's a way to go kind of around that system. And I go to multiple banks and we stay below their minimum income requirements, and we apply and we get 1, 2, 3, 4 loans, and we stack them 1, 2, 3, 4 on top of each other. Those are credit lines, but they can be stacked. And now you can get bigger dollar amounts. The minimum approval there is 30 to 40 grand. And we go up to as high as 100,000, which is extremely common to go those type, get that type of a product. Those are going to be a series of personal and business credit lines, credit cards. So what happens is if you're getting these credit lines, if you get business ones, of course, they don't show up on your personal credit unless you ever go late, because you have to personally guarantee them. But it does open up, and it gives you a lot more access to capital if we can combine them and get more. once you have that cash that's sitting in your desk drawer, you might have three or four credit cards. They're all going to come in at 0% for 12 to 18 months, every one of them. So you get basically cheap money. You're using somebody else's funds to get started. And then what you'll do is of course, we're going to talk about how to convert that those credit lines into cash, right? Because we got to do that too. But having access to that cash and having it sitting in your desk drawer is the key, because now it's there. You might have $100,000 in credit cards sitting in your desk drawer. Don't go on a cruise with that money. That's not the key. You're going to use this money for your investing so that you can build your business.
I thought you were going to say you're going to use that money so you can go on the cruise that you weren't supposed to use the credit cards for.
Yeah, don't do that. Because the goal here is to give you the leg up. I'm not here to bury you with all this debt. We're here to give you a leg up so that you got access to it. Now, we have to still overcome. We got to say, okay, if we're going to use this for renovations, not an issue at all, no problem. If we're going to use it for a down payment, okay, as a down payment, we now need to convert that or liquidate that into cash and then let it sit for 60 days, right? So if we know that that's the strategy that you're working towards, then what we'll do is that we have a database of just over 500 banks in that system. And so we can go through and we can look at which banks are going to offer convenient checks right out of the gate. Have you ever seen, you ever get a credit card and there's a three or four checks attached to it? You ever seen those?
I don't know if I have. Honestly, I've seen that.
They happen quite often. In fact, more than not, you get your credit card and they'll have a little convenience check, and there'll be two or three of them that are attached. And we usually throw them away, tear them up, and throw them in the garbage. Don't do that. That right there is like converting that money right to cash. You can write that check to yourself, drop it right in your checking account, and that counts. So that money at 0% is yours. You can use it. You want to stick it in there for 60 days, and you've got that access to that for 12 months. So 12 to 18 months go by. Now let's talk about refinancing that before it goes into an interest rate. But in the meantime, you got basically free money, cheap money, and then to turn around, it's not quite free because they have a fee they charge to put it together. But the intent there is every monthly payment you make, 100% of that payment goes to principal. So it's getting paid down quicker and faster as you move that forward. It is open credit line, so it's going to be available for you for later. So as you use it and pay it down, you'll have it available for you to use again and then again and again. I have people that actually have done that process every year for 3 to 4 years in a row, and they end up with $500,000-$600,000 in open credit line.
So let me just walk through this. I think that, you know, some of the concerns with credits is, okay, is this affecting, I know on the business credit side, which I'm sure you work with people to focus on as much business credit as possible. But on the personal side, or, you know, even for the business, possibly, like, how much is this affecting people's credit, where, like, would it interfere with them being able to go and qualify for a conventional loan? Is this multiple credit pulls? How does that come into play?
Great question. And you are right. And there's a yes and a no to that. Okay. So here's the cool thing. The answer to that question is yes. If you do that, you're going to have three or four credit pulls that are going to affect you. Credit pulls are not necessarily the reason why your score drops. They'll drop minimally, but that's what they're there for. So they usually, the higher the score, the less effect it shows on your credit. One inquiry makes about a 3-point difference for someone with a 750 score. So it makes a 5-point difference for somebody who lets less than a score. So two or three can affect it by 15 points, right? 15 to 30 points, 20 points. However, that only affects you for about 4 months. So it matters. No, it'll stay on your credit for 2 years. I get that. But it will only affect the decision-making process for 4 months. So as you're going through that, you have to understand that there will be a dip initially, a little bit of stress on your credit as you start going. Now, if you started out with $20,000 in credit cards before, we got you $80,000 in credit cards after, it's actually going to mean that as you use your credit, you know how when you use credit now, you charge 10 grand on a $20,000 card, your score is going to drop, because you just put 50% usage on a credit card. If you have $80,000 of availability of credit cards and you use $20,000, your score is not going to drop so much because you have more availability than you had before. So in the end, the credit health is going to be stronger for that person because they now have more access to more capital. Your score will actually not go down. It will actually go up
as
you use it and build it.
There could be it could be actually more productive to do this just in a credit building exercise. This is one thing that, and I think there's just a lot of misinformation and confusion out there around credit in general. Generally speaking, you want to be below like 30% of your overall credit usage on an ongoing basis.
That's just-
That will allow you to increase your credit. Opening new lines of credit doesn't necessarily, sometimes I've seen it where it doesn't affect your credit at all. Actually, this exact same question comes up when people are like shopping for mortgages and they're like, well, I don't want to have too many credit inquiries because it's going to lower my credit score. And I always chuckle a little bit because normally those people are also people that have 800 credit and they just like, they want to have this.
We say they worship their credit. Once you hit 800, you start to worship that score a little bit.
And it's really not.
Telling you, I know what that is.
And you're not practically using it, right? So to be specific though, 740, above 740, there's no added benefit from a lender perspective on a conventional side. You're not going to get an improvement of rate. So if you're sitting 760, 770, 800, 850, like it, that's not really using, like credit is meant to be used, right? As an investor. And so both on the mortgage side, on the credit side, like you need to think about these things. So that's one thing to be conscious of. There could be a short dip, or there could be very minimal impact, whether you're qualifying for mortgages, taking out lines of credit. But you just be conscious about where you're at. It's different if you're a person that's 650, trying to qualify for your first mortgage. You may need to be more strategic about this, but for the vast majority of people we talk to, I mean, invest with us, they have good credit and you can do a lot of different things, and banks will lend to you, but you're not going to have a dramatic impact. So let's just use a practical example of this. So, you know, we've talked about installment loans. Now we're talking about essentially taking out lines of credit, credit cards, converting that to cash from multiple different banks to actually increase the ultimate amount of money where you could be in that $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 range, much quicker for the average person. You could convert that to cash, which could be used as a down payment on one or multiple properties. Once it's converted to cash and seasoned, great. Now you can use that as down payment on other properties. However, you do need to be conscious, I would think, in this type of scenario where you say you have this introductory fee for 18 months at zero, I guess one question is, are you required to make minimum payments, and how do you avoid those high credit card fees at the 18-month term? Is it a function of just making that like minimal payment due? I mean, let's say you converted all of it to cash. Is the idea to refinance and pay that off, pay the majority of the principal down, roll that in? I've heard of people rolling it into other credit cards that also have an introductory 0% for another 12 years. I mean, talk to us about that aspect because I think that could be a concern for people.
So definitely there are people that do that where we call it kind of the game where you take your zeros and then you convert them. We do a second round and then you just basically switch them over and add more. It's a lot of work. You've got to be okay to do all that. When it comes to 0%, those 0% introductory credit card offers that they have and those ones that even in the process, we're doing this unconventional business funding type product, there's no recapture. Meaning they're not going to come back and pick up all the interest you have in during that 0% period. It just starts interest on whatever you have outstanding at that point. There is a minimum payment due. That minimum payment's always going to be between 1 and 1.5% of the outstanding balance. So whatever the outstanding balance is, you can just calculate that in your head. You want to use 30 grand, then it's going to be between $300 and $450 a month, somewhere in that range. And that's going to be broken out over three or four, maybe those cards to get that, but it's all going to be the same no matter what.
So with appropriate planning,
I can't remember everything you said. I kind of got held.
No, I have a tendency to do that. Ask one question and then follow up with five other questions before I let you answer. But, I think Randall, in this scenario, it's important to me to understand where you're at credit wise, understand how this could be strategic for you potentially. Whether it's in conjunction with a potential installment loan or just by itself individually, but also have a plan, right? Have a plan in 12 to 18 months. What are you going to do? Is this a refinance scenario? I mean, we have a lot of creative financing options outside of this. There's a lot of builder incentives right now where I mean, you could potentially, you know, this could be a way where you could certainly use this in conjunction with some other creative finance methods to buy properties with no money down, potentially of your own out of pocket. Mm-hmm. Now you just need to be conscious about, like, okay, in that 12 to 18 month time frame, what does the numbers look like then? How do you potentially refi or, you know, pay majority of this back by then? But then it is a line of credit that you could just recycle, right? I mean, the people that are making big moves in real estate are using a combination of strategies like this because, again, yes, capital is a limiting factor. So you can use multiple strategies like this to expand your portfolio. But I don't know if I had any more specific questions on this one per se. Adam, what do you think?
Yeah. So can you just go over the business requirements for this again? I think you mentioned like three years of tax returns, or to do this, what does your business have to be?
For business lines of credit, right?
Yeah, for this unconventional business funding.
Yeah. So the good thing about the unconventional business funding part is all I need is your personal credit and an EIN number for your business. I don't have to have all that other stuff. I was mentioning if I were to go to get a traditional loan,
okay,
I would need all that. In this case, we don't. I need to have your credit score. I need to have, you know, need to have good credit. And we have to have your current EIN number. There's not a seasoning requirement on the business being open. You can actually have people that go and open a business and get started right away, getting credit underneath that business. Once you start getting business credit, you're building what they call a Paydex score. You're familiar with all that, right? As far as Paydex, which is a business's credit.
No, break that down for us.
So basically your business, once you start building business, you're going to get and I'm sure you guys both have seen this before, you'll get a letter from the Dun & Bradstreet. Dun & Bradstreet, we always throw them away because you think they're just trying to get you to do something, you know, to sign up for their little thing. You can get a number for free, a Dun & Bradstreet number. Dun & Bradstreet's number connects to your EIN number and it creates your business's credit score, which is what's called a Paydex score, P-A-Y-D-E-X, Paydex. A Paydex score then allows you to start to use your business to build your, get more capital and to build that for long term. At some point, eventually, you'll be able to use your business to buy whatever commercial real estate or whatever you want to do using business credit. You'll still personally guarantee it, don't get me wrong, but you will be able to yet let your business have its own credit on top of it.
But it would be realistic for, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is the beginning step to starting and building that process.
But someone could set up an LLC and probably get some line of credit almost immediately, right? And that's good to access capital. It's good to not have this on your personal report, your personal credit report, because it is a business line of credit. And it's good to build business credit for future business endeavors and investments. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. And if you wanted me to break down credit scores for Paydex scores and how to build them and all that stuff, we certainly could. I'm going down the weeds. Remember, I warned you, I might do
that. So we've all literally thrown money away, is what I just heard you say. Anybody who started a business has most likely thrown money into the trash can.
Well, it's just that this is another one of those pieces that people don't understand the system. If you knew the system, it's easy to use the system to your advantage. And of course, having now double, if you got business and you got personal, now, okay, I'm going to do this project. I'm going to use the business this time. I'm going to use the personal this time so that we can basically double the amount of access availability that we have moving forward.
I mean, I am curious. I do get these Dun & Bradstreet and Bradstreet letters. I also throw them away immediately because I get 1,000 other things in the mail. But what is the range for business credit scores? I'm just curious. And how does that matter?
It's 0 to 100. And you need to be at 70 to 80. That's considered good credit. Okay.
You start off with good credit if you just started the business. I mean, your personal, right?
It kind of fluctuates. I haven't really seen a beginning one. But I've seen, you know, and the way a business credit where it works, and I'm just going to cover it briefly because I know we want to talk about other things. But the way that the business credit works is different from debt credit ratio, which is what we're used to on our personal side. I have 10,000 available. I use 6,000. That's a 60% debt credit ratio. My score is going to go down based on that, right? So if I'm using business credit, business measures it differently. It measures how much you use and when during the month you pay it back. If you pay it back on the 15th day, the 20th day, the 25th day, or the 40th day. Each of those matter because it's measuring how much you use and when you pay it back. It wants you to max it out. You have a $40,000 card, use all 40. Use it all. Use it all and then pay it back. And it's measuring as you pay it back how you're doing on the payback. Are you paying it on time? You pay it early, and how that works. And it will, that is all it is. And it's wonderful because it now opens up another world that just after a little bit of time, you'll have access to be able to use some of your business. Again, I have to admit, I have to be very clear. People think, oh, I can just go out and get an LLC and then I don't have to use my personal credit. You're still going to personally guarantee it. That's just the name of the game. But at the same time, it's its own entity. It has its own seat at the table. It makes its own decisions. And as such, it has the ability to get its own credit. You just have to be there as its daddy, if that makes sense.
So in the beginning, though, like you could set up an LLC, you could still get a business line of credit more than likely from a brand new established business. It will likely tie to your personal credit in that case, but you're still able to access capital and build business credit at the same time.
Yep. And the good thing about that is because it's getting put onto the Paydex score, your personal credit doesn't show up, which means that when you go to get a mortgage and you go to get other loans, that part isn't included in your debt to income ratio because it's not a payment that's showing up. Number one. Number two, technically your business is responsible for it.
That seems kind of crazy that Zach and I could go out, each start our own business, each take out the same amount of money. But you're saying that one of our credit scores would be better if we paid it on the 15th versus the 25th?
On the Paydex side.
Yeah.
On the personal side.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but our business credit scores would be different if we just paid the payment, you know, 5 days different.
And regardless of credit utilization or the amount of capital, you know, amount of credit utilization, that's interesting to me. I learn stuff all the time.
I never heard that.
Yeah.
Breaking new ground here, Randall.
Well, just all you got to do is Google Paydex. You'll see it there.
All right. So go ahead.
So, yeah. So, and my point being the whole Dun & Bradstreet part is that Dun & Bradstreet is the one that's the connector, the catcher EIN. It basically converts that to your social security number for a business. That's what that is.
So Randall, if someone has thrown away that paper right at the beginning, is it as easy as just contacting them and saying, hey, I threw it away. I want to get started? Or, you know, how do you do it?
You can actually just go online, dunnabradstreet.com. Probably it's that easy.
But do you need that though? I mean, is that something you guys probably pull for someone applying for a line of credit? They're not coming to you with their Dun & Bradstreet score, right? I mean,
no.
So
part of the evaluation for the down the road. Initially, you're springboarding off your personal credit. That's why you can just go get a new one and it all of a sudden will work, is because technically it's still your credit that they're relying on. It's your credit they're springboarding off of, and then they're going to build based on that.
So Randall, you've laid some knowledge on us here with a lot of different creative ways that people can access capital to be savvy investors and scale their portfolio without just using their hard-earned money as a down payment for, you know, part or whole, all of their next investment. First of which being a potential, you know, personal or installment loan, where they could access probably easily $25,000, possibly more in most cases, let that season for 60 days and use that as part of a down payment on the next property, pay it back over whatever, 3 to 5 years, whatever term they decide. They could also use in conjunction or separately some creative like credit cards and lines of credit where they can do it through their business or personal. It will be, I understand, tied personally, but possibly access more capital than the installment loan aspect. Just being conscious of how they're paying that back in a shorter period of time. But still, these are creative ways where you can access more capital to reinvest and be a savvy investor. Kind of as we conclude here, is there any other methods or any other things to be conscious of that might be interesting to our audience?
For today's sake, those are the two primary things that I would. We've talked about or I'm sure you've talked about some. You know, right now is an absolutely optimal time to be working with sellers, where they've got these 3% rates. But I'm sure you guys have had those conversations about seller financing, those kind of things. But I think the one thing I would like to you brought up that I want to kind of address. I've done this, I've worked with thousands, I mean, I'm not saying hundreds, thousands and thousands of people to get funding for their businesses, for their real estate projects and the different things like that in the unsecured way on top of the mortgages that we worked with. But I'll tell you the one thing that stands out that you mentioned to me that I just want to bring up, which is credit score. You said 800 scores. You said six, you said 760s, whatever, 740s. And I think what I want to kind of just address here is there's a specific mentality to be an 800 score person. Okay. And quite frankly, they're the hardest ones to get off, the log, because they are afraid of debt. They're afraid they built this tool. They've had this tool their entire life that's been there for when they need it. A lot of times they forget that this is why you did it, is for this purpose. You have this score for this reason. So don't let this get in the way of worrying about your score. Your score will come back. It's naturally going to rise back up. It just is. That's the way, that's the nature of credit. As long as you're making payments on time, the nature of the credit is to go up. But some people, especially the 800s, they are afraid of debt. They're afraid to take action. They're afraid to take that move and say, I'm going to do this. I know it's the right thing for me to do, but they don't jump off that log. And you guys, like you can, I can see you've seen that before. It is, they're my biggest, you know, and I'm, listen, I told you before, I'm one of them. I get it. But I also realize that credit is I use that credit so that when the time's right, I can act.
Yeah.
Acting is when you make money, not thinking about it.
No. Yeah. It's a tool, right? And an 800 credit score ain't making you any more richer. So,
I get people come to me all the time. Oh, my credit just dropped by 5 points because I did this or that. And I'm like, yeah, great. You get what you needed.
I can't even tell you how many people are like, well, I want to buy a property. I want to get close. I want to get pre-approved, but I don't know if I want to do it today because is it going to be a hard pull and hit my credit? Like, what's your credit? You know, like what we were talking about, like, are you like right at the cusp and you may drop down? Well, no, I'm not. So tell us, kind of as we wrap up here, what are the downsides? Why wouldn't someone do this? It's kind of to give the, I mean, obviously we've talked about it and it sounds like, you know, I could just go and get $200,000 in credit somehow and, you know, just kind of unlimited if I just keep opening up new accounts. And what are the risks and what do people need to avoid as they're doing this?
So the one thing I will tell you is if you try and go out and do that process on your own and go get those, you'll fail. I hate to say that, but they know which banks look at which bureaus to make their decisions and which part of the country, believe it or not, which banks are offering 0% for what part of the country they're in. If you go out and you try and do it on your own, you're going to probably get stunted at one point. Let the professionals do what they do. I don't do that. I have a company that does that exclusively for us so that we can make sure that we're getting the right person to do it in the right way. I do want to also mention that I know this isn't quite what you brought up, but I want to cover this while it's on the top of my head. Credit, soft pulls, everything we do to look and see. Guys with 800 scores, at least take a look. It's a soft pull to look and see. Everything nowadays, you can pretty much have a soft approval and you can get a feel without it affecting your credit. And if you like it, then you can worry about the hard inquiry. But initially, it's a soft look. So look and see what your availability and what your options are, and you don't have to worry about your credit getting hurt. Now, I think the biggest pitfall, like I mentioned, was if you try to do it on your own, you'll probably it's like jumping in the water that's a little bit too deep for you. You may not quite know what you're getting into. Let the professionals do it. With that said, the other challenge I would say, the other drawback might be that if you do worship your credit score, be prepared. It's going to come down a little bit before it goes back up again. It will go back up. It's just the nature of the way. If you're someone that doesn't like debt, which 800s do, they hate debt. They're afraid of it. They pay everything off as quick as they can. Great. So as you do that, it's only going to strengthen your credit down the road, and it's going to make it less sensitive to every time you do this or that. It's going to be less sensitive to your credit score.
To me, the risk is someone that isn't planning appropriately, that arbitrarily takes money out without having a strategic plan in 1 to 5 years of how they're going to pay that back. But you solve that with simple planning. But Randall, this has been really, really good stuff. And just to revisit what we talked about in the beginning, because that's where you and I initially met, I mean, if you're interested in joining the Rent to Retirement Academy, and you're looking for options to not have to pay that fee just out of pocket, which, you know, it's a few thousand bucks to expedite your investing goals and make you a more savvy investor, as well as start earning money every time you invest and refer people. But I mean, this is a creative way where you can save your capital for real estate, and you could use a line of credit or an installment loan to pay for that, save your money for real estate. Or more importantly, this is a way that you can access more capital in multiple different ways to become a more savvy investor and buy more real estate over time, because that is the end goal here. So Adam, close us out and tell people how they can, you know, connect with Randall.
All right. Well, Randall, thanks for joining us again. Randall's the CEO of True Heroes. You can go to their website, but really the best way to do it is we're going to put a link in the show notes and have a QR code for you to scan so that you can get the real deal from them and get the rent retirement treatment right there with them. So just click on the link in the show notes if you're listening to this and have it on your phone downloaded. If you're watching it on YouTube or some other stream, scan the QR code that'll be on the screen. If you want to check out the inventory that you should be buying with those lines of credit, you can head over to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com. Schedule a time to talk with us. We can help you through all of the everything except the business credit. That's Randall's specialty. But you can find it all there at renttoretirement.com. Really appreciate the time you spent educating yourselves today. Talk to you on the next episode.